Welcome to this podcast from Adelaide Place Baptist Church. We are a community of disciples, apprentices of Jesus, who live and work in the city of Glasgow, and it's our vision to join God in the renewal of all things. Our discipleship to Jesus is for all of our lives, so as well as listening to this podcast, we'd love for you to join us on a Sunday morning or get involved in one of our missional communities, which are across the city throughout the week. Our prayer is that you encounter Jesus in some way through this podcast. More information can be found at apbc.net.
Thank you very much for inviting us. It has been great being with you over this weekend. As David told, I had the fun of being with David Roy in Kenya, and we will be there again, I think, in February. We are part of walking with some churches in Nairobi, Kenya, in their learning process. And this weekend I have met people from other churches as well who turned up here for the gathering, and some of you. And Sarah and I and the kids have been in Scotland quite some time. So over the years we have been in Edinburgh several times. We have been on vacation up here, I think, twice. I think we have felt that there's something that unites a Danish and a Scottish mentality, very egalitarian cultures, and that there are many things that we recognize. It might be the Viking genes, whether it's your fault or our fault. I don't know if you know the story about the Orkney Islands. We had a king in Denmark, hundreds of years ago, and you had a king here, and the king here wanted a wife, and the Danish king sent his princess to be the queen of Scotland in the back centuries ago. And when you gave away your daughter, there had to be a dowry following it. And as always, Denmark were more or less bankrupt. So we never sent the money with the princess. And the King of Scotland didn't like that. So it ended up that we had actually the Orkney Islands, but we gave them to Scotland as a dowry with that princess. What happened was hundreds of years later, in 1860 or something, someone in Scotland found the original letter and the promise of the dowry. So they sent a letter to the Danish king. We never got the money. And the Danish king, it's a true story. He wrote back, saying, yeah, you actually got the Orkney Islands. That's something, isn't it? But I don't know how the case ended, actually. But we never got at war with each other, as far as I know. So that was good. But so there has been some interaction, I think, historically. This morning, I'm going to speak with you about how do we participate? How do we become part of? How do we lean into what God is doing? And there will be bumps on the way, but there's something about being part of what God is doing that nothing can compete with that. Yeah? There's something about being, have a sense, we are, little me is a part of a big, big, big story. And I have my little role to play. And that meets a deep imprint from creation of what God intended when he created you and I. It's a... Also, a great honor to be here on Remembrance Day. My granddad was actually a soldier in First World War. Most men my age in Denmark, I'm 46, will have granddads who was part of Second World War, if they were part of the war. But in our family line, it's different because my dad was born in a very late age by my granddad. So my granddad was actually born in 1879. And he was fighting in First World War, and I will come back to that story. A part of Denmark then was occupied by Germany for 60 years. So even though he was a Danish born and bred man, he was forced to fight on the German side in First World War. And he did everything he could to not really do anything well in the army. And he actually survived the escape. I'll come back to that story later. But let's read what Jesus is saying when he gathers the disciples in Galilee. We are not in Jerusalem, we are in Galilee. We are in Matthew chapter 28. And this is what Matthew tells us happened after the resurrection. Jesus gathered his disciples, and they were back where it all began in Galilee. Then the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of age." I don't know, what do you call that text here? The Great Commission? Yeah. I mean, it has had many names. It has been called, in my context, the command to baptize, or the command to go and do mission, or the command to teach. But actually, there's only one imperative in the original text, the first Greek text in the New Testament, and that is make disciples. All the other words that are imperative, go, make, are not imperative in the original text. And so the original text say going, teaching, you know, or you could even translate it as you go. The only imperative is to make disciples. So this is Jesus' commandment, Great Commission, to make disciples. And we will see that unfolds mission as well. In the first church, the early church, the word mission was hardly used about mission. In the first centuries of the church, the word mission, that means being sent, was almost never used about something the church did or the people of God did. It was used about God. He was the one who sent his Son. He was the one who sent the Holy Spirit. And it was used about the church who were the sent ones. Based on John chapter 20, Gospel of John, where Jesus is saying, "As the Father sent me, I sent you." So the people of God were the sent ones. In a way, you can say the church was the mission. Yeah? It was spread out all over the Roman Empire in small communities built around households. And by doing that, only were 10 or 20,000 people in the early time. I mean, maybe the first 100 years. But 100 years later, year 200, there were much more. There were thousands. But it began as this kind of movement of disciples who were the sent ones themselves to model another way of living than Roman Empire brutality, who model another way to be in community. We see it in Paul's letters. Paul is saying, I mean, in a household, the dad, he should have Jesus as his role model, Ephesians. We think, of course he should. In the Roman Empire, there was no "of course he should." A patriarch in a Roman household, in the Roman Empire, he was the law in that family. He would have mistresses, he would have his wife, he would have children. He could sentence people in his household to the death penalty if he wanted to. He could make every decision. He would not eat with his wife and children. He will eat with the men in the front room. So when Paul is saying to the churches in the New Testament, you should eat together, you should actually have a meal that goes back to the meal Jesus originally had, they were like, what? Should men and women eat together? Loads of stuff we take for granted because we have been part of a Christian story for so long as cultures. But that was new then. So the communities were the sent ones who lived in a different way. Later, they became so successful, so the emperor of Rome declared Christianity as the legal religion and later as the only legal religion in the Roman Empire. So suddenly, Christians found themselves in a situation where they were on the top of things. They had access to the emperor and to the Senate and to all the power. And slowly, we ended up with the church more or less without mission. A church without mission. That's not fully true, because the mission orders, or the monastic orders, the Desert Fathers and so on, and Benedict later in Europe, began to actually to do a mission and draw the church back to its original calling. But in many ways, we had a church without mission. When something happened after the Reformation, where we again got a church with mission, but in the way that mission was thought to be something that happened in other countries who were not Christian, historical, some missionaries were people sent out from churches like this to do mission somewhere in the world. That happened in the 7th century, the 18th century, and so on. Your church is probably part of that story, I would imagine. That's true? Yeah? This church has sent out historical missionaries around the world? Yeah. So you had a situation where we had church and mission. So the church was what we call the people of God when they met in the original historical Christian Europe, and mission was something that happened out there. I even grew up in a mission house. I grew up being part of a mission house in a local church where we had missionaries coming home from Africa showing slides. I know there are many young people here who don't know what I talk about. It was not PowerPoint. It was real slides. Anyone who remembers the DS slides, yeah, from Africa? And for every time the missionaries came, the colors, you know, slowly faded away. So they ended up having just black and white slides, yeah. And they had stories from the villages in Africa, and we were fascinated, yeah. But that was the paradigm of mission. That was the lens of mission. Mission is something out there. So we had church and mission. But something happened. Actually, in many ways, as a consequence of the huge crisis of First World War, for so many people in Europe, that you begin to ask, is Europe actually really the Christian world? And the missionaries we sent out were so successful. So now, this year, 2018, for the first time in history, there are more Christians in Africa than any other continent. The future of Christianity, the future center and hotspot of Christianity will not be Europe. That will be Africa, South America, Asia. And in that whole process, in the 20th century, the church in Europe discovered we probably are as much on a mission as anyone else. We cannot lean back on the old days and say, we are the Christian Europe, or we are a Christian nation, or we have done the deal. No, suddenly something happened in our own culture, in our own context, that we had to rediscover. And theologically, you have rediscovered. Most theologians would say today, the church is in mission or on mission. In other ways, church and mission cannot be separated. Just tell that to your neighbor. Church and mission cannot be separated. Could you get water? And it was actually a Scottish man who relearned the church in Europe that we are as much on a mission as everyone else. Mission is not something someone from a church who are a little weird does in Africa or China. Mission is what a Christian does. And Bonhoeffer said, either the church lives and exists for the world, or it doesn't exist at all. Either the church lives for a bigger story and a bigger influence and a bigger mission, or it doesn't live at all. And it was a Scottish man, Leslie Newbegin, out of anyone who more than anyone taught me and many other in my generation to rediscover mission in Europe. He came home as a missionary and came back to Europe. And he has been in India for many, many years. And he said, what has happened in Europe? What has happened to the church in Europe? So, the church is on mission. And this is the approach we will take to these words from Matthew's Great Commission this morning. And I would share four different perspectives on being the people of God on mission, being the sent ones. And the first goes back to a guy that influenced me a lot. I was reading his stuff when I was in high school, and he's called Viktor Frankl. Anyone who heard about Viktor Frankl here? Yeah. His great, great book about the meaning of life, Man's Search for Meaning. Viktor Frankl was put in concentration camp during Second World War, but survived. And as a psychologist, his whole life was about doing research about why did I survive and not others? And what happened to me in that journey? And he helped lots of people, traumatized people, as a psychologist. And his book, Man's Search for Meaning, is his answer to that. He said he survived because even in concentration camp, he had such a search to make, or such a deep, deep yearning to make a difference about everything. He wanted to do research, he wanted to teach. He had this deep, deep imprint in him almost. He does not refer to God like I do, but he talked about that deep, deep thing about the search for meaning that kept him alive. And he came with this thesis in psychology. He said, man's search for meaning, human beings' search for meaning, questions of existence, is more profound than our search for food and just physical survival. He disagreed very much with Sigmund Freud on that thing. He said that sexuality is not the basic drive, as Sigmund Freud said. No, there's a deeper drive in the human being that search for meaning. In other words, he said, any person will ask, what is the meaning of life? Where do I find meaning? Years ago, there was an American journalist, Sebastian Junger. He went out with the armed forces from America and Afghanistan. He followed them. He has done some very famous documentaries. You can find him with TED Talks and so on, Sebastian Junger. He did a book a few years ago called Tribe. And he says in this book about himself, he's a young man who grew up in a suburb in America. How do you become an adult in a society that doesn't ask for a sacrifice? How do you become a man in a world that doesn't require courage? He grew up in an American suburb, and he followed these young suburban young men who signed up for the armed forces in America to go out to Afghanistan and live with lack of luxury in constant danger. And when they came home and he met them at dinner tables, he asked them, do you miss anything from being out there in Afghanistan with the troops? And they often said to him, I miss everything. So Sebastian Junger wanted to find out, how come that people can actually come home from war and miss it? And he said, this is not, the answers he found by his research is not about typical macho, you know, the strongman mentality. No, there was a deeper thing, he said. And that was the brotherhood, the comradeship that grew among these young men on that mission. And you can see all his findings in the amazing book Tribe on Homecoming and Belonging. See, we have this deep search for meaning. We have a deep search for purpose, for being part of a brotherhood and make a difference. And the way we handle that as human beings is through big stories. We look for the big stories. And where do I fit into the story and find my meaning? I'm going to show you a picture. It will come up on the screen now of a man who has influenced everyone in this room more than any of us would normally know. And he is called Joseph Campbell. Joseph Campbell. Joseph Campbell was an anthropologist. And in the years after Second World War, he traveled around to all original tribes and cultures in the world, as many as he could visit. And he was listening to the traditional folk tales, the legends, the stories of all these people groups. And he was asking, what is your story? What is your legend? What is the original folk tales you tell? What are the poetry that originally? You will have them in Scotland. We will have them in Denmark. And when he began to write down all these in his anthropological research, all these stories, and he discovered there was a pattern. Whether he went to South America or to the Celtic nations or in Scandinavia or America or China, wherever he went, he found, he said, a certain pattern that united all these stories. And he called that pattern the hero's journey. He said wherever he visited a culture and listened to the folk tales, they had the same basic pattern. And Joseph Campbell, he began to write down what are the common scenes and plots that unites all these stories we tell. And he called it is the hero's journey. It's always a story about some person who is called out of his natural status on a journey. Yeah, you can see it here, the hero's journey. So think about Tolkien, his story about Frodo, the Lord of the Rings. You can see all the aspects of this illustration in Tolkien's famous story. So there's a call to adventure, there's supernatural aid, there's the helper, the mentor, and there comes this point, the point of death, where the hero either dies or almost dies. And is one way or another coming back again. Transformation happens, atonement, and he returns. That is the hero's journey. And the reason that has influenced everyone in this room is that Joseph Campbell became a very good friend of George Lucas, who did the Star Wars stories. Yeah, the Star Wars movie. Are you with me? Are you awake? Yeah? So he said to George Lucas, if you make a story built on this hero's journey, you tap into something that unites every culture on the globe, you will be successful. So George Lucas built the Star Wars stories around the hero's journey. And anyone who knows Star Wars, any Star Wars fans in here? Yeah, Michael, at least I know. You will recognize, oh yeah, Luke Skywalker, blah, 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 you know. And you see it in so many movies. I'm not a true Star Wars fan. I know Star Wars, of course, having three boys, you know. There's no way to go without it. But my first visit in cinema when I was 12 years old and I was captured was not a Star Wars movie. That was actually not even one of these. That was the Karate Kid movie. Anyone who remembers, who's old enough to remember the Karate Kid? Karate Kid? The original true Karate Kid movie, not the new ones, you know, that Denzel Washington made, but the original one. You know, with that young man who can't find his way in life, and he meets Mr. Miyagi, who becomes his mentor. He trains him in karate so he can fight the enemy and conquer. Anyone who knows the Karate Kid story? Remember this? Wax on. Yeah? Wax off. Come on. Wax on. Wax off. Yeah. You recognize it. Yeah. So I was 12 years old, sitting in the local cinema and captivated by that story. Why does a man like me, 46 years old, okay, clever, why do I still open Netflix or go to the cinema to see stories that I exactly know how will end? Because the hero's journey stirs up something in any human being that will captivate you. For me, it was the Karate Kid movie, who was like the first. Oh. For others, it would be Star Wars or Harry Potter. I mean, for my children, it's Harry Potter. I had a young man working for me at the office in the church, you know, 20 years younger than me, close to Michael's age. And I asked him, have you been reading Harry Potter? And he looked at me and said, Kel, I am Harry. You know, that was a great story of his generation. Why on earth can a lady go to, a poor lady in Scotland, go to a little pub in Edinburgh and write a book that has sold 500 million copies? Yeah? How can that happen because J.K. Rowling used the hero's journey. So tell your neighbor now, when do you remember in life your first time connected with a hero story, either in cinema, in a book, or whatever, that just captivated you? Just tell your neighbor. So, when you open Netflix or when you do streaming with whatever, Netflix, whatever it is, when you go to the cinema, when you do whatever you do with stories, you become captivated because you were created to be a hero on a journey. Joseph Campbell discover that he was not a Christian. He did not argue from created in the image of God perspective, as we will do, but he discovered the truth. We are created to be heroes. And this is why Carl Jung said that, the psychologist Carl Jung, that Jesus, by all stories, is the meta story for any human being. And Carl Jung said that the first half of life, we learn to live. The second half of life, we need to learn to die well. And Jesus is the model. He had the same similar insights about this journey in life. C.S. Lewis discovered it as well. We're going to see what he said about it. The heart of Christianity is a myth that is also a fact. The old myth of the dying God, without ceasing to be myth, comes down from the heaven of legend and imagination to the earth of history. It happens at a particular date, in a particular place, followed by definable historical consequences. We pass from a Balder or an Osiris, you know, he quotes from the Nordic folk tales where I come from, the Viking folk tales, dying, nobody knows when or where, to a historical person crucified. It is all in order, under Pontius Pilate. By becoming fact, it does not cease to be myth. That is the miracle. C.S. Lewis discovered that his journey into faith was to discover as a literary, a professor in literature, that all the stories he knows as a professor found their meaning in that story about Jesus Christ. So Jesus is the true myth. He's the true hero. But he was not a superhero. Sorry, Michael, you love superhero. You know, yeah, we talked about that. You love superhero movies. He was not a superhero. Jesus became a hero the opposite way, by leaving the heavenly realm and become flesh, become a man, a real man like you and I, a real human being. And as a real human being, he fulfilled his hero's journey, his mission, even to the point of death for you and I. And he was raised again to live eternally. And after his disciples, as we saw this morning in Matthew 28, he exactly gathered the disciples to say, now you will be on a hero's journey like me. Like the Father sent me on a hero's journey, John 20, I will send you on a hero's journey. And it will connect with the thing we were created to live in, that we lost in the fall and in sin, but refinds in Jesus. This is great. The pressure in the society of our days, at least in Scandinavia where I live, to discover your true self, to define your own story. We can just give up on that because we have already since creation been designed to be part of a much bigger story than my success in the next X Factor show, in the next talent show. We are called to live as heroes on a journey. And like Jesus, we are not called to be superheroes. We are called to be true heroes, human beings, with all our limitations and brokenness because of Jesus living in us. The Bible only has true human beings as heroes. Think about it. I mean, Peter, who was called to lead the group of disciples after Jesus, he denied Jesus on the very critical point. And he was pruned spiritually. And he had to surrender and say, Jesus, not even I could really do what you were doing. And Jesus said, no, Peter, you couldn't. Do you love me? Do you love me? Or we have Paul, who persecuted the church. He was on the most brutal, horrible hero's journey you can be, killing other people. And he became the missionary par excellence for the whole of history, St. Paul. God took so broken people who did so big mistakes as his heroes. I mean, if a leader who has persecuted Christians like Paul did, and Peter who denied Jesus' name, can be used by God, when you and I can be used by God. Amen? Amen. And you will not be called to be a superhero, to play something off, to appear like you are not broken. You are terribly broken. But Jesus lives in you if you believe him and are baptized. He lives in you. And he will call you on a hero's journey with him. Not you alone, but with other heroes in this community. My granddad, who was forced to fight for Germany at First World War, he grew up in that part of Jutland where you were occupied by Germany since we lost the empire in 1864 and the rest of the empire, Schleswig-Holstein. And so he grew up as a Dane by heart, but were forced to speak German in school and were forced to dress very well on Kaiser Wilhelm's birthday and turn up in the local school, even though he was on Danish territory, you can say. And my granddad, he was a rebel. He was a true rebel. So he turned up on Kaiser Wilhelm's birthday in school in the most bad clothing he could find. And he was not giving a little cake like all the other kids in the school. And so, and they put down the names. They put the names down of the people in school, the Danish people who were rebel to the occupying forces. And so later, when he was called in to serve on the German side of the war, the rebels were sent to the most difficult places, and he was sent on the Eastern Front. And he was married. He had to leave his wife and children, and that was his first marriage. He was not married to my grandmother there. It was a later marriage, but he was married and left his first wife and children, and he wanted to get home. He wanted to get home. It was so meaningless. I mean, the war was meaningless, but it was even more meaningless for him to fight for the enemy, so to speak. So he escaped, and he was discovered and forced back to the army. They did not kill him, even though normally they would kill people who deserted the army. He was not killed because they lacked soldiers. When he escaped again to relatives in Germany, and he sold his last things he had, he bought a compass, and he walked through 7 nights up through Germany back to Denmark. hiding in daytime, walking in light, or in the night times, by the moon and the stars and the compass. When he was close to the Danish border, he was discovered by a guard, a border guard. And the guard came close to my granddad. And my granddad thought, oh, that was his, now I will be shot because I escaped the army. But when he looked into the eyes of that soldier he never knew the name of, the soldier made the decision, the German soldier made the decision, the border guard, not to do anything. He just left him. So he survived, came home, and many years later got married to my grandmother, and that's why I'm here. He is a true hero by escaping the army. He wanted to go home. And I will honor that journey today. But he was also a broken man, and the war definitely put a shadow over his life and the thing he had seen, and my family's life, so to speak. In France, outside Paris, there was a little monastery. And in that monastery, a guy turned up. We are back in 1600 now. And a guy turned up in that monastery who has been in a war. He was a cripple. He was wounded in some war, I think probably between England and France, or I don't know. He turned up in that monastery in 16-something and said, can I stay here? I'll just be the dishwasher. And the monks in the monastery invited him in, and he became the dishwasher in that monastery. And today, nobody remembers that monastery. It's not there anymore. But everyone can remember that guy if they come across a little book, The Practice of the Presence of God by Brother Lawrence. Because Brother Lawrence was that dishwasher. Brother Lawrence, he was washing dishes in the monastery every day, and he began to pray. He could not live like the real monks who came for the prayer time 7 times a day, but he could just pray as he was a dishwasher. And people began to seek him for advice. So in the kitchen in the monastery, people came from the whole area to be prayed for and talk for Brother Lawrence. And somebody came by and began to write down what Brother Lawrence said. And you can still buy the book today. It's called The Practice of the Presence of God by Brother Lawrence. He was a dishwasher. He was a war criminal. That became a hero. I mean, church history is full of heroes. Normal, broken human beings. For with the Spirit of God, use them and send them with the good news. That's my prayer this morning, that you will really take that to heart. That you are created to be a hero with other heroes. Finally, and we're in for landing. The hero's journey looks different. If for everyone, it begins being the hero, like Frodo, but we end up being the mentor of the next generation of heroes. So some of you are here today, and you have kept your faith in Jesus your whole life, and you are in a season in life now where you are not the Frodo, you have to be the Gandalf. Yeah? You have to be the mentor for the next generation. That's the way God will now use you as a hero on the journey in mission. Are you accessible for that? Or will you sit and think, oh, I'm 60-something, I have nothing to offer. I mean, if you have lived with Jesus for 60 years or 70 years or how many years, you have lots to offer. Because a person who has been living with Jesus and prayed with Jesus and known Jesus for 60 years has more to offer than one who has lived for 10 years or 4 or 5 years. That's very biblical. Are you with me? Yeah? Some of you in this room should hear the call today to really be the Gandalfs. The mentors. And you should cheer on the next generation to continue the journey, their journey. You should pray for them. they should sit at your kitchen table when it's difficult. And you will say, yeah, I know life is difficult sometimes. Hear my story. If you're young, next time you watch Netflix or wherever you do your streaming, think about, oh, why does this captivate me? It captivates because I'm created to begin or continue my hero's journey. Ask the question, what is God saying to you? And begin to reflect on with other Christians, what will you do about it? Because he has a journey for you. He has a specific journey where you are the hero. In your brokenness, with all your limitations, and walking that journey is the most fascinating you can do with your life. That's my testimony. It might be painful, it might take sacrifice, but there's nothing that is more meaningful than to do that journey. Let's stand and pray, should we? So let's stand here. Jesus Christ, you are the true hero. And Jesus, when I was 12, sitting in that local cinema with 12 other people on a Tuesday night, and I got captivated by the story, Jesus, of Daniel and Mr. Miyako. You touched my heart with something through that story. I was captivated because I was created to be on a journey with you, Jesus, and be part of what you are doing, your mission. And I thank you this morning for the journey. I thank you for the journey when I have found myself in the valley of death. And I thank you for the journey when I have found myself on the mountaintop. And I pray that you will stir up in our hearts that by you given yearning and calling to be on a hero's journey with you, Jesus. Not as superheroes, but as normal human beings. I pray for the ones who hear this calling for the first time this morning, that you will speak and with your spirit be present in their hearts. And stir up passion to serve other people, to bring the good news, to do the walk, to live in community, to love your neighbor, to share the gospel. And I pray for the ones of us who have done the hero's journey, are in the second half of life, and are called to be the mentors and train and equip and walk with and serve the upcoming heroes. I pray to release that calling powerfully on this church. There will be experienced, mature Christians here, walking with young people, praying for them, cheering on them, supporting them, listening. Lord, I pray for the journey this church has been on since it was founded. That devil to rediscover that calling again. The calling to be the sent ones. And I pray for you to do that again for the sake of this city, this nation, this amazing place. And I pray for the ones who are in the valley of death, who has been on a journey and are almost giving up, or find it very painful, or are disappointed. I pray for you to meet those hearts. Comfort. Inspire. Heal. And I pray that they will hear, "Come on, good servant, continue the journey. Do the journey of the cross and the resurrection. Walk with Christ. Fulfill the mandate. Be part of an amazing story. Young person here, and you just feel, yeah, I hear this call. Just raise your hand. If you hear, yeah, I just God called me. Maybe the first time, or again, or stirs up that call. Just raise your hand with me now. Yeah, come on, Jesus. Yeah, just raise your hand. Yeah, brave woman. Yeah, raise your hand if you hear the calling. A new or fresh, yeah, great brother, yeah. I know this is not either Danish or Scottish to do this. This is why I want you to do it, yeah. We don't do this in Denmark either, but God, we just raise our hands now. I pray for the people, raise their hands. Stir up, meet them anew. Fill them with passion. And if you are here and you are called to be the mentor, you are in second half of life, like I just began by being 46. I just began that journey over the last 3 years. If you are in that season in life, that second half of life, and you hear God's calling and you just want to respond, just raise your hand. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, cool. Thank you. Yeah. Lord, I pray for the people here, the mentors, that they will embrace that calling, the second half of life. All the experience and invest in the next generation.